Welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante along with Chris Buccanani. Chris, how are we doing this week?
I'm doing very well, Jim. How about you?
Not bad at all. I'm another show I'm really looking forward to. We started the part one last week. You and the guys at For the Bloggy are doing an all 21st century team. How about you just update our listeners on just what you're doing, what the timing is for the release of the shows, who it's being brought to us by? Give us the whole background.
Absolutely. Thank you, Jim. Well, whether you can believe it or not, we're a quarter of the way through the 21st century, which seems crazy, I think, to both of us, because having been born in the fourth quarter of the 20th century, the year 2000 was always supposed to be like, quote unquote, the future. And now it's 2025.
Y2K seemed like it was just yesterday.
It's quaint. Y2K is, yes, is just a quaint anachronism at this point. But we thought we would mark the turning post here in the 21st century by looking back on 25 seasons of Penn State football, 2000 through 2024, and celebrating a lot of the great Nittany Lions we've been blessed as Penn State football fans to be able to watch over that time period. And so we impaneled a wide array of voters, including some media folks that included yourself, Jim, to vote on a quarter century team, the best Penn State football players of the last 25 years. We had a starting team, a first team and a second team. And then we did a show for each unit, second team defense and offense, first team defense and offense. Last week, or 2 weeks ago now, we released the second team defense. As folks are listening to this, the first team offense show is available, and those are all on the YouTube channel of For the Bloggy. So you can just search For the Bloggy on YouTube if you're not already subscribed. And if you're not, what are you doing? So you can check out the obligatory quarter century Penn State second team defense and offense shows. And we really do appreciate our sponsors who help make it possible: Anti-Fragile Brewing Company in State College, and especially the Hoppy Valley Brewers Fest, which is coming back to Penn State on July 19th. Big microbrew festival in the middle of July outside on the Penn State campus, right outside Beaver Stadium. Beautiful view of Mount Nittany, over 75 breweries, a lot of them from right here in Pennsylvania, bringing stuff that you won't be able to buy in the store or maybe even get at their location. And a lot of times I know I am not quite as much of a beer snob, aficionado, whatever, as my co-host Kevin Horn, but he explains to me that a lot of these beer festivals, you don't typically get the head brewer to show up to really explain what you're drinking and why it tastes the way it does and the story behind it. We're very particular here in the Valley about our beer. You know that, Jim. Penn State and Penn Staters are particular about their beer.
Beer is important.
We get the experts here. So July 19th, I hope we're going to see a lot of your listeners there. And we appreciate the folks at the Hoppy Valley Brewers Fest for letting us be a part of promoting what they do. I'm really excited. This is its second year, and I want to see it going strong for many, many years to come.
Let's see. Beer, State College, middle of the summer. What else do you need to hear, Chris?
I should mention the URL is Hoppy, not happy. Hoppy, like hops for beer. HoppyValleyBrewersFest.com. Get your tickets today.
Check it out. All right, Chris. So a week ago, we started going through this, not giving away any of the secrets, pre-announcing anything. But what we're doing is we're giving my ballot, who I voted for. We got through most of the offense except for the offensive line. Today, we're going to do the O-line and the defense. But before we get there, I do want to just quickly get your take on this.
Sure.
Last week, the announcement came out on some of the, well, the first four games of the Penn State season. Game times came out. First of all, it was kind of nice to see in the three out-of-conference games, which is just terrible games, but at least two out of the three are at 3:30.
Yes,
Nevada and Villanova. That's kind of nice. 3:30 to me is like the sweet spot for game times. Plenty of time to tailgate, get into the game. And for an old guy who has an over 2 hour drive home, it's still at a reasonable hour. But then most importantly, game four, Oregon, first Big Ten game. It's Oregon under the lights, 7:30 on NBC, the whiteout. Chris, are you as jacked up for that game as I am?
Absolutely. And now I'm going to be on pins and needles for the next few months that Oregon doesn't find some way to, biff it against Oklahoma State or Oregon State, because this has the potential to not only be, a return of the proper whiteout, but the first time we get a top five matchup in a whiteout game. So if the Ducks can hold up their end of the bargain, it should be really exciting. And so, Penn State, as you just mentioned, scheduled Nevada, FIU, and Villanova in their non-conference. Thanks very much to the good folks at the Ohio State Athletic Department for having more integrity than the people at Penn State and actually scheduling Texas in week one, because that's what saved us. That was the game. Obviously, Fox was going to take Penn State, Ohio State, and Penn State, Michigan. But how could they pass up Ohio State, Texas? So that moved Penn State, Oregon down one spot in the pecking order and got us out of Big Noon territory.
For those who don't understand what Chris is referring to, the Big Ten games are a draft among the networks that cover it. So Fox, actually, as the primary carrier of Big Ten football, they get the first three picks. And they picked Ohio State, Michigan, as they always do, first. Ohio State, Texas, and apparently Ohio State, Penn State, which is later in the season in Columbus, which freed up the Penn State, Oregon game for NBC.
It's a beautiful thing.
It really is. And Chris, I'm going to ask you if you agree with this. My feeling is that game is huge for Penn State in its meaning. Now, not so much the one loss record, because a year ago, Ohio State played Oregon early, lost that game, and ended up winning the national championship. Okay, if Penn State were to do that, all's good in the world for the Nittany Lions. But I think just for the mindset of this team, the mindset of the fans, the national feeling about this Penn State team, they really, really need to win this game.
Yeah, I wish I could disagree and say, oh, well, early in the season, blah, 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 and only the playoffs matter. But yeah, again, at some point, you have to do it. You actually have to win one of these games. And I don't want to back into a 12-team playoff, a 10-2, and say, oh, okay, now that the games matter, we'll just count on the team to turn it on. No, at one point or another, you got to back up the expectations. And things could not be laid out more favorably for Penn State in this game. So, must win doesn't really happen until the playoffs. But let's just go ahead and label this must win anyway.
Right. And I've said this before. My theory is Oregon a year ago, they were undefeated regular season, then got the rear end spanked in the first playoff game. In contrast, Ohio State, two losses in the regular season, especially that unexpected one against Michigan, and they still end up winning the national championship. I think for those two teams, a regular season big game, it probably doesn't mean quite as much. They're both, for both of them, I think it's all about the playoffs. But I think the sensitivity, the narrative on this Penn State team is they can't win a big game. They can't be a big-time team. And for a lot of folks, beating SMU and Boise State a year ago in the playoffs means nothing in how they observe Penn State, how they think of Penn State. So for me, they've got to be Oregon.
And I don't want to hear too much complaining about that either, because those expectations are a blessing. Okay. There are only a few programs in the country that have risen to a level of prestige to have those types of expectations. So don't complain about the fact. I get it. It must be frustrating. I know it's hard to win football games. You win playoff games and you're like, man, we still don't get credit. But a lot of life, Jim, is about perspective. And I look at it and say, how many programs are there in college football that could win those two games that Penn State did last year? And I'm grateful for them as a fan. But I also understand the perspective where it gets dismissed a little bit because it's SMU and Boise State. That's a testament to how people view Penn State and what they where they think we belong in the pecking order of college football. So that's good stuff.
And you know what also, Chris, and this is a subtle difference, but I've had this conversation with our colleague, Steve Pavlik, who's as much of a Penn State fan as he is. He's very critical of James Franklin. He'll use the big game James moniker a lot for him. But I don't think so much it's like losing those games, say, to Ohio State, a much more talented team. It's blowing those games.
Sure.
Having
a lead in the fourth quarter and then you're in the loser column at the end of the game. Yeah, man. Look, as you know, Jim, I think you and I are both fans of James. He's difficult to defend at times, as I'll freely admit, and I do it regardless. I will say this. I think that many of the areas for which he has been justifiably criticized over the course of his career now, which spans over a decade in Happy Valley, have been pain points he's been able to address and get better at. You know, things like staffing issues, clock management, I could go through all of them. I am hoping that, again, he can check another item off the list with this whiteout game against Oregon, because it's going to be a tough game. That's a really talented team. But like I said, you couldn't ask to have a game of that caliber and still have the variables stacked more in your favor than they will be for Penn State.
I agree 1,000%. And even the playoff game against Notre Dame, you had a lead. In many ways on the surface, it appeared you had the better team and you found a way to lose that game. That's what I have an issue with, and they can erase all of that. Both James Franklin and Drew Aller in this game, September, against Oregon in the whiteout. All right, Chris, that's it for quarter number one. As promised, when we start quarter two, we're going to get right to it. The all-quarter century team. Stick with us.
Happy Valley United is the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student-athletes at Penn State. These opportunities allow student-athletes to engage with charitable causes and participate in business engagements to build their brands while making a positive impact. The collective connects fans, alumni, businesses, and charities with student-athletes harnessing the power of Nittany Nation. Go to happyvalleyunited.com to connect with your favorite Nittany Lion team.
It's quarter number two on the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number two. He's Chris Buchanani. I'm Jim Galante. We're talking Penn State football. As promised, Chris, we're going to get to that all-quarter century team. Last week's show, we did most of the offense. Let's hit the offensive line. We'll do that as our starting point. Then we'll get to the defense, Chris. But first of all, offensive line, for my ballot, I found this the most difficult area because I think it's because you couldn't fall back on the numbers and you don't have those spectacular, memorable plays.
Sure.
That you put on the offensive line. The offensive line might be spectacular, but what we remember is Saquon Barkley going to the house.
Yeah, sure. Maybe not as challenging for me, Jim. I even joke about it on the second team offense show, which again, you can watch right now on the For the Bloggy YouTube channel. You know, I hate skill positions. I love the muckers and grinders. I love the guys who play in the trenches. I will say, going back, we talked last show about how this gave you an opportunity to revisit a lot of great players you got to watch. Penn State has had some really talented players despite struggles overall on the offensive line and offensive tackle and center. When you talk about O-line as an up-and-down issue, when I got to ranking four guards, especially the guys who got onto the second team, I will say that's when I started looking at it and saying, man, it's been a little thin here, especially as compared to the other two spots on the line.
Well, you could see some of the talent, as you mentioned, on offensive tackle, but to differentiate it is what's tough. Let me list the names on your cheat sheet, which is fantastic, and then I'll give my names. Okay, here's on the cheat sheet. Here's the candidates: Kareem McKenzie, Levi Brown, Gerald Cadogan, Dennis Landolt, Mike Farrell, Adam Gress, Donovan Smith, Chaz Wright, Ryan Bates, Rasheed Walker, Caden Wallace, and Olu Fashanu. That's
I do
list.
Just want to point something out quickly too, Jim. I know you've been mentioning the guys on my cheat sheet. We did not give people a ballot and say these are the only names you can choose from. That was basically my way of saying, hey, here are the guys who I think will be in contention for these spots. But people were free to pick anybody they want. If there was someone I overlooked, that was fine. I just don't – I want people to understand the process. You could pick any player – and we trusted people to make, you know, reasonable votes, not just put a guy who didn't belong among the very best of the best of the last 25 years. And everyone did that. So I don't know that there was anybody who wasn't on the list, but just somebody asked me who's on the ballot. And I said, well, anyone who played during that time period.
But I think you did a great job in putting that together, Chris.
And you mentioned Kareem McKenzie. He only played one season in the 21st century. His senior year or his last year at Penn State was 2000, but he qualified as a result.
Yes. And because of that, and I'll admit, I thought of him, I didn't punish him for that.
Yep.
Let me put it that way. So here's my list. I had Fashanu first, Levi Brown, Donovan Smith, and Kareem McKenzie as my top four. And I'll say this also, Chris, this is not supposed to be about NFL careers, but it's hard not to, because in your head you realize, you know, they're drafted high. Well, they're drafted high for a reason, because of a great collegiate career. But those are my four. Again, not giving away any of the actual choices. You okay with my top four?
Sure, yeah, and we can give away the second team offense. I mean, again, I hope people will go watch the show, but you okay. Got it. Jim, you got the two backup tackles. So those were the guys who got the most votes. Again, McKenzie, despite that just 1 year, he was a great offensive lineman.
Yes.
Got on the field right away and got recognized at first or second team all-conference. Every year he got appreciable playing time. Really, really good player. Donovan Smith, I think of mostly when I think of him, I think about him sticking with the program. He was 2011, he was a freshman. So that's somebody who came in, committed, and played for Joe Paterno and stuck through Penn State through all of it, including some very lean times on the offensive line as a result of the sanctions. And so, I will always appreciate those guys deeply. A couple other guys who I think deserve recognition, and Landon and I talk about this on the show. He also tells a good story about Donovan Smith, so people can go check that out on the For the Bloggy YouTube channel. Both of the tackles, Jim, on the 08 offensive line, which I think was one of the best O-lines we've had during this 25-year time period we're talking about, Gerald Cadogan and Dennis Landolt. Either one of them, I think, would have been worthy members of this team. And Caden Wallace, too. I mean, you mentioned Olu, and everybody knows what he did at Penn State. I thought until Caden Wallace finished his career at Penn State, he was one of the better offensive tackles we've had in this time period.
And, you know, what I think happens sometimes, offensive linemen stick out when they make a mistake.
Yep, absolutely.
Not when they do stuff correctly. And I think Wallace may have struggled a little bit early in his career.
Sure did.
And that already painted people's opinion of him prior to him developing as time went on, which does happen with offensive linemen. So that's a good call there, Chris. All right, let's get to the guards. Just to read through your list quickly, Tyler Lenda, Tyler Reed, Rich Ornberger, Johnny Troutman, John Urschel, Miles Diffenbach, Connor McGovern, Stephen Gonzalez, Will Fries, Mike Miranda, Sal Warmly, and Vega Ioane. Let me give my list. And first of all, I'm probably the biggest Vega Ioane fan that there is out there, Chris, okay? When he plays, when they make him like the sixth offensive lineman, put him in motion, for a guy that size to be that athletic to do that. However, I don't have him on my list. Maybe a year from now I would. So just that's my extra comment. Here's my list for offensive guard. First, I have Connor McGovern. Second, I have John Urschel. Maybe I have him a little high, Chris, because I just love everything about Urschel. His abilities off the field. I know that's not part of it. Shouldn't be part of the argument. I can't help myself. I'm a huge John Urschel fan. Third, I have Rich Ornberger. And fourth, I have Will Burger Shake and Fries.
I have no problem with John Urschel being number two at guard on your ballot, because that's where he was on mine as well.
Okay.
And to go back to what you said about Venga, it's interesting. I think I mentioned last week, I did not vote for any guys who still have eligibility remaining, even though we told people you could if you wanted to, because to me, their story is not written yet. But it is an interesting question. If we went back and did this a year from now, when many players like Venga Ioane and you know, Dennis Sutton, Zane Durant, Drew Aller, Nicholas Singleton, and Catron Allen, when they've all finished their careers, how many might challenge for a spot on this list? But yeah, I think your list is good. You hit on two guards who made the second team in Connor McGovern and Will Fries. My personal opinion, and it's not to take anything away from Will, I thought there were probably a few other players who maybe deserved that spot over him. If I'm just looking at the totality of their careers, I did not vote for Will Fries. I think a guy I didn't vote for who probably deserves a lot of recognition is Tyler Reed. Went on and had a career in the NFL. Several other guys I commend: Johnny Troutman, Miles Diffenbach, Mike Miranda. When I talked about guard, there was maybe not as many great players as you could choose from at tackle, but a lot of quality players. But yeah, I think Will is sort of a reverse of what we talked about with Caden Wallace. Struggled early on when they played him at tackle, and then in comes Phil Troutwine, moves him to guard, coaches him up, and he plays well enough that it leaves an impression that earns him a spot on this team. So good for Will.
Yes, and this is a place you put it exactly how I was going to, which is there aren't the great players here, but a lot of very good players, so it's a little hard to pick among them. I'm going quickly because I want to make sure we get through everything, Chris.
Yes, sir.
Let's get to the centers. Joe Iorio, Easy Smith, A.Q. Shipley, Stefan Wisniewski, Brian Gaia, Michael Mennett, Jew Scruggs, Hunter Norzad, Nick Dawkins. Again, a current player who maybe a year from now. And, you know, I look at this and, how do I not have Stefan Wisniewski on here?
A fair question. Yes.
That was
a curious decision on your part.
So I'll concede that right now I perhaps made a mistake there. I had A.Q. Shipley and Juice Scruggs and probably made a mistake.
Which is no shade to Juice at all. It was interesting looking at, again, I won't give away Jim who got the two spots, but people could go watch the video and see that Wisniewski's the second team center. So I imagine your audience is smart enough to infer who is the first team. We've had a nice little run at that position recently as well. And but for two really tremendous players in the past, I think some of these guys, to include Juice Scruggs, would be absolutely right there in that discussion. In fact, I might even go so far as to say that with Nick Dawkins still having another year to play, if we did a third team, I think Juice might be the guy, right?
Yeah. And it, I think the difference, you know, it's tough at center because there's only, you know, one center on the field. So we got two players, a first and second team, as opposed to the guard and tackle. This is a pretty nice little run here of guys in that position. And some of them who had multiple year starters, you know, now we're going to have Nick Dawkins back for another year. Again, I think he's another guy. I don't know if he'd crack the top two, but he certainly would be in the good chance he could be in the conversation in another year.
I think so, too. And with Cooper Cousins set to replace him. So we'll cinch up this conversation by bringing it back to the present day. All of that, or a lot of it, at least, I think is attributable to Phil Troutwine. Recruiting talent, developing talent, turning a weakness into a strength. It's good stuff.
And yes, that we can look at multiple guys on this offensive line and from Phil Troutwine's work and say, hey, they belong in the conversation. All right, Chris, with that, we've wrapped up the offense. We got two segments to go to get through the defense. Stick with us.
Happy Valley United is the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student-athletes at Penn State. These opportunities allow student-athletes to engage with charitable causes and participate in business engagements to build their brands while making a positive impact. The collective connects fans, alumni, businesses, and charities with student-athletes harnessing the power of Nittany Nation. Go to happyvalleyunited.com to connect with your favorite Nittany Lion team.
Let's get back to the action on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. He's Chris, I'm Jim. It's quarter number three of our show. We are going through the all-quarter century team for the Bloggy. Go to their YouTube channel for the Bloggy, it's called. Some great stuff there in addition, but it's a four-part series already out. Are the backup Team 2 defense, Team 2 offense. Check it out at the For the Bloggy YouTube channel. And it's brought to you by who, Chris?
The Hoppy Valley Brewers Fest. Get your tickets at HoppyValleyBrewersFest.com July 19th. We want to see you up here at Penn State. And Anti-Fragile Brewing Company.
Very good. All right, let's get to the defensive side. We're going to go through some of the names to look at each position, and we're going to look at my ballot. So you can be critical of me after you hear my choices. All right. First of all, let's look at some of the guys on Chris's cheat sheet. Not the nominees. They're just part of the cheat sheet. I mentioned on offensive line, there's positions and a lot of good players and maybe not great. Chris, at defensive end, we have some great players.
The whole D-line, yes, sir.
Let's go through some of these names for defensive end. Michael Haynes, Tom Bahali, Aaron Maben, Jack Crawford, Deion Barnes, Carl Nassib, Sharif Miller, Etor Gross Matos, who I think gets forgotten about a lot, Chris, Shaka Tony, Arnold Ibikidi, again, another guy I think gets forgotten about, Adisa Isaac, Chop Robinson, and Abdul Carter. All right, Chris, this is where someone might accuse me of recency bias, but so be it. Number one, I have Abdul Carter. I know, just 1 year at defensive end. I know he struggled a bit early, but oh my goodness, by the end of the season, Chris, what a very special player playing defensive end. He was special. Abdul Carter first, then I have Chop Robinson. I know, maybe a little recency bias, but I was a real big Chop fan. I think if you just isolated on him, watched him, Chris, in a play, just isolated on him, you saw how disruptive he was. Every play, even if he wasn't getting the stat, wasn't getting the tackle or the sack, he was beating his guy. Then I have Carl Nassib and Tamba Hali, and I left off a boatload of really good players.
Yeah, and again, I will tell you, you voted Abdul Carter number one on your ballot. So did I. And it was an interesting exercise to try to balance recency bias versus, again, you're trying to get voters who have a longer view and can speak to having watched and appreciated all the players during this time period. Sometimes I think nostalgia leads you to maybe overweight at least a guy from the past. And I think in general, looking at everybody's ballots, I think our voters did a really good job of being able to compare and say, hey, Abdul Carter just finished his career, but I feel like I can put him in the context of all the other greats at that position. So, Jim, one of the names that did not appear on your ballot but did make it onto the second team is a guy who I do think gets forgotten about because he played so long ago, but really was dominant during his time at Penn State, and that's Michael Haynes.
Yes. He was a fantastic player. I go through this list, and it's like, boy, there's a lot of other names I want to put down on my list, but you got to pick out four. And you make a great point also, Chris. I think I fall more into the trap of nostalgia usually. You know, like people don't remember Lydell Mitchell, say, or Franco Harris.
Mm-hmm.
I did. They were the running backs of my youth, okay, when I was a kid. So in my head, they're always going to be all world. Or maybe I should say in my heart, they'll always be all world. But when I use my head with this, it's Saquon Barkley, the more recent guy, as perhaps the best running back. The same thing here with Abdul Carter. I mean, in my mind, you're just not being objective if you're not aware of just how good Abdul Carter was this past year.
Well, and I am open to arguments for other players, certainly. And if I go back and I think about it again, I don't know, would I rate him second instead of first? I wouldn't have him outside the top two, that's for sure. But what I will tell you is that because we left the criteria open for people to interpret, you could look at it any way you wanted, other than we asked people, don't judge guys on their NFL career. Just think about what they did at Penn State. And for me, when I thought about Abdul Carter, I thought, okay, just in terms of what he was at the position, even though he only played there for 1 year, if you slapped him on the roster of any of these other teams from the last 25 years, is he going to be one of your starters? And so I just thought about ability at the position, but I also think what you do in big moments, the plays that you make, just sort of the aura you brought during your time at Penn State, that factored into the voting for me. And I am never going to forget that guy playing on one arm when he absolutely did not have to against Notre Dame.
Oh, and there's a pretty good argument that he shouldn't have played, and he was still special with one arm. He was probably the best player on the field playing with one arm. So, yeah, great point, Chris. Okay, where are we at? Defensive tackle we just did, right? Or no, we did defensive end. I'm sorry. Let's get to the tackles, Chris. Here's the list of names: Jimmy Kennedy, Anthony Adams, Jay Alford, Jared Aldrich, Devin Still, Jordan Hill, Daquan Jones, Anthony Zettel, Austin Johnson. Another guy, by the way, who gets often forgotten. Austin Johnson was pretty special. Kevin Givens, Robert Windsor, PJ Mustafa, Devon J. Thomas. Another good list.
A ridiculous list. I mean, we could go six deep on this one easily.
I had to pick four: Jimmy Kennedy, Jared Odrick, Devin Still, and Jordan Hill. Those were my picks.
I love those picks, Jim. It broke my heart to leave Jordan Hill off my ballot. I kept trying to find a way to get him in there, but I actually did end up voting for the same guys who made our second team in the second team spots. And you and I were aligned on Jordan Hill. And Anthony Zettel was my fourth out of four defensive tackles. Just got the versatility of that guy to play inside at the size he was, and then to just make all the different guys. He could get sacks. He had four career interceptions. Just a unique athlete. But man, you talk about Jordan Hill, Daquan Jones, Austin Johnson, Jay Alford, Anthony Adams. It's a pick 'em. It's not like one guy deserved to be there and the others didn't. There were probably, as I said, five or six guys who would be defensible being included in that second team.
And, you know, here's we said you don't take into account their NFL careers, which is fair. It's supposed to be their collegiate career. However, Chris, I think you could realize, or it's very enlightening to see where these guys were drafted to tell you what kind of collegiate career they had.
Sure.
I realize sometimes beyond their playing, there's the combine and just their physical attributes, and NFL teams will draft based on that versus their actual career. But that's a pretty good read on what they did in their collegiate career. Let me just read off, and again, kudos to your cheat sheet, which informed us of this information. Jimmy Kennedy was a first-round draft pick. Anthony Adams was a second-round draft pick. Jay Alford, round three. Jared Oldrick, round one. Devin Still, round two. Jordan Hill, round three. Daquan Jones, round four. Zettel was a round six. Austin Johnson was a round two draft pick. Robert Windsor was round six. Who did I miss here? But just that alone tells you the quality of talent that was at that position, Chris.
Larry Johnson Jr., or senior, excuse me, at his best, at his absolute peak. I mean, Ohio State got many great years out of that dude. I think there's some rumblings inside the program that maybe now he's about ready to get his AARP card and ride off into the sunset. But at his peak at Penn State, LJ Sr. was cranking out NFL caliber interior linemen like no one in the country and like very few position coaches we've seen in the sport.
And that's another thing. You mentioned Troutwine when we talked about the offensive line. Penn State's done pretty well with defensive line coaches, Chris.
Yes, and I think we have got our long-term replacement for Larry Johnson Sr. and Deion Barnes.
Yes, to have a guy that young do what he's been doing. You know, the question I have with all of these coaches, Chris, is can we keep them around for a while?
I do think it helps when you have somebody with ties to the program. So I don't know what Deion's aspirations are, whether he wants to be a coordinator one day or maybe even a head coach. But I do think he seems to be settling in very well as a position coach. So I am hopeful, knock on wood, that we are going to keep Deion around in that spot for a long time. Because like Phil Troutwine, who we finished up the earlier segment talking about, he is in that sweet spot of being able to get the raw material on campus as a recruiter, but then develop it once the guys hit Penn State. So when you get that kind of a balance on both sides of the line of scrimmage, it really goes back to a plot line I think we will talk about a lot this summer, which is top to bottom, James Franklin maybe has the strongest staff in the country, unquestionably his best staff since he's been at Penn State.
I'm in agreement with that. And, you know, these teams, you love the star players, the quarterbacks, the running backs, the receivers, but the line of scrimmage gets forgotten and it has such a true effect. That's why I'm most excited for this season because of this offensive line. When was the last time, Chris, we had these expectations? And I was really struck by, I forget who put the article out, a national article, of course, top 10 offensive lines, and then didn't have Penn State's offensive line on it. I think it then came in honorable mention. I,
Well, whoever made that list doesn't know what they're talking about. I mean, to not have them in the top 10 is preposterous.
I'm with you on that. All right, Chris, that's it for quarter number three. We're going to finish up with the linebackers and the defensive backs. A lot of great players there, as you might expect, when we come back.
Happy Valley United is the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student-athletes at Penn State. These opportunities allow student-athletes to engage with charitable causes and participate in business engagements to build their brands while making a positive impact. The collective connects fans, alumni, businesses, and charities with student-athletes harnessing the power of Nittany Nation. Go to happyvalleyunited.com to connect with your favorite Nittany Lion team.
We head to the home stretch in quarter number four on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. He's Chris Buccanani. I'm Jim Galante. It's quarter number four of our show. Our show today is brought to you by Happy Valley United, the Penn State collective that supports 31 sports and over 850 student athletes at Penn State. They support a lot of different things, some charitable causes. We saw that with the kids at Hershey recently. They also sponsor some absolutely fantastic events. Recently, there was the We Are in Philly event. Well, guess what? We're going to take a look at the other side of the state, too. That's right. Next week, next Wednesday, June 11th, the event is the We Are in Pittsburgh. The event kind of leading up to the U.S. Open at the Fox Chapel Golf Club. That's next Wednesday, June 11th, from 7 to 9 p.m. It's a chance to meet the coaching staff, some players, some lettermen, have a good time, get to mingle with some like-minded Penn State fans. If Pittsburgh weren't so far away from me, I'd be heading out. But this one is for those of you who are listening from the western half of the state. Great event. If you want some more details, just check them out. Go to happyvalleyunited.com. That's happyvalleyunited.com. All the information there. Get your tickets for We Are in Pittsburgh next Wednesday at the Fox Chapel Golf Club. Chris, we are going over your list along with For the Bloggy. And if you want to see their videos, go to the For the Bloggy YouTube channel. You have your all quarter century Penn State football team, Chris. This was an incredible exercise. You guys did a lot of work to put this together, and it's exceptional, Chris.
Well, you know I'm a big Penn State football history guy, Jim.
Yes.
Any Penn State Ali members out there in the audience, please sign up for my course. I'm teaching again this fall on the history of Penn State football. I always tell people at Penn State, the football is the means, not the ends. It's just the reason we get to come together and gather socially and have a great time among fellow Penn Staters. And one of the great unifying aspects of it is sharing memories of great players you got to watch represent the blue and white over the years. So to me, the most fun from this has been talking to the voters and now interacting with the audience and all the memories it brings up that are shared amongst all of us of being able to watch all these great players play. And I guess that's a really fitting transition to talk about the linebackers, because boy, did we have an unbelievable run during these last 25 years.
We really did. And I'm going to get to the list of linebackers here in a second, Chris, but was this the strongest position on your list?
Ooh, let me think about that for a moment. Yeah, I think so. I think so. Although we just talked about defensive tackle. That was pretty good too.
Well, let's go over the list of linebackers and we'll see if our listeners agree. All right. How about Derek Wake, Paul Puzlesny, Dan Connor, Tim Shaw, Sean Lee, Josh Hall, Navarro Bowman, Nate Stupar, Mike Hull, Glenn Carson, Michael Motti, Gerald Hodges, Brandon Bell, Jason Kambinda, Cam Brown, Micah Parson, Brandon Smith, Curtis Jacobs, Kobe King, and Dom DeLuca. And, you know, there's a guy by the name of Abdul Carter who started out as a linebacker.
How about it?
He probably could have been mentioned in both positions, Chris. I know the rules were whatever position he finished at. That's a crazy list, isn't it?
I'm listening to you read those names, and I'm thinking you could probably make a fourth team. Forget about a third team. You could make a fourth team, and most college football programs in America would be thrilled to have had those guys play for them over the last 25 years. Linebacker, you.
Exactly. Since there's three linebacker positions, we got to name six players. Here were my six. Paz, Connor, Micah Parsons, Sean Lee, Bowman, and Maudie. And just real quick, Micah Parsons was third on my list. And some people might question this. Remember, he sat out the COVID year. I suspect if he had played that year, he might have jumped up to number one on my list. Okay. It's a great credit to him that he's a third on my list, which still puts him on my first team. And Michael Maudie in the tiebreaker was just, well, he just means something a little extra special for Penn State football, Chris. That's why he's on my list.
Yeah, and I, you know, you named a trio of superstars up ahead of your second team. Again, kind of going back to the center conversation, I expect your audience is educated enough in Penn State football that they can reasonably infer who the top three are going to be after they see who made this the second team. And I think you were very close to where most of the voters were, although Micah Parsons did make the second team on the final ballot. And I think, to your point, it was just the limited window of time he played for Penn State that might have hurt him versus some of these other just unbelievable players at that spot. And I'm 100% with you. Mike Maudie was on my ballot. He was on most ballots. He made the second team. And it's not to say he wasn't a great player, because he certainly was. He was a first-team All-American his senior year at Penn State. He probably saw the field just as much, maybe, if you added up all the snaps, as Micah Parsons, because he struggled with injuries. But to me, that guy is a permanent legend for what he did off the field. And because we told everybody, you can interpret it however you want, it's clear the majority of voters took that into account. And I would argue that they should. I certainly did.
Well, that's the fun part in voting on this type of thing, Chris, because you've got you it's open to interpretation, and it's not quite as when you make it, say, an all NFL team and you vote on that kind of thing, where it's kind of you take emotion out of it. Okay. This is college football. This is our school. Guess what? Emotion is part of it. It's part of our memories, how we think of these guys. You know, it's how we, Michael Robinson, you and I, one of our favorite quarterbacks. He didn't even get to play quarterback in the NFL. They made him into a fullback, okay? If you want to technically say you judge him as a quarterback, that tells you something. But what he did for the Penn State football team goes well beyond just that, how good of an NFL quarterback he was or was not. All right. Let's move on. We've got to get to the defensive backs. Let's start with the cornerbacks. And here's the list. Not a bad list here either. Brian Scott, Rich Gardner, Alan Zamaitis, Justin King, Tony Davis, Lydell Sargent, Denton Lynn, Stephen Morris, Christian Campbell, Amani Oriarie, John Reed, Tariq Castro Fields, Joey Porter Jr., Daquan Hardy, one of my personal favorites, Johnny Dixon, and Kalen King. Here's my picks: Zamaitis, King, Porter, and Scott.
And again, Jim, you voted for the two second team guys. Brian Scott, who I was happy to see make the team. Really, really good player, unique player. Just in terms of his size speed combo to be able to play outside at corner, even in college, he didn't do that in the pros. But and his size was really impressive. But because he was so big, I do good hit. a ton, over 200 career tackles to go along with his five career picks. And Justin King, yeah, it's interesting, too, as you look at these lists, you see that even though Penn State did not have great success sending a lot of defensive backs, more so at corner than safety, to the NFL under Joe, collegiately, we always had good corners. But man, the run under, going back to these assistant coaches, Terry Smith and Anthony Poindexter, of NFL caliber talent in the defensive backfield under James Franklin, really, really exciting as a Penn State football fan.
All right, let's make sure we get to the safeties here, Chris. Some of the names to look at: James Boyd, Beaujeu, Sean Meyer, Calvin Lowry, Anthony Sherrato, Nick Suke, Drew Astorino, Adrian Amos, Jordan Lucas, Marcus Allen, Nick Scott, Jaquan Brisker, Jair Brown. And I went with Brisker, Brown, Boyd, and Allen.
It's a good list. Really good list. But really, a lot of competition for the final safety spot. Probably the most fourth-team defensive tackle was the most contentious spot. In fact, Jay Alford missed it by 1 point. I mean, wow. And it was clustered up at the bottom. Same thing with safety. The second-team safeties were Jair Brown, who's one of my personal favorites,
yep,
and a great leader as well, going back to intangibles, and Anthony Scarrato.
Yeah.
But, boy, there were a lot of other guys who got votes. Adrian Amos got votes for sure. Drew Astorino, Calvin Lowry, and a guy you voted for who was not in that bunch right below the fourth-team spot, but I'm glad you mentioned because he had a great career at Penn State, one of the hardest hitters I have seen play for Penn State, James Boyd.
You hit exactly why I voted for James Boyd. He was one of my personal favorite players. Anytime a defensive back hits like that, Chris, I'm going to be all for him. Real quickly now, we got through the whole group. Your final thoughts on it, on your team?
A couple other things on the defensive backs quickly. I did end up voting for Calvin Lowry as my fourth team safety. I feel really good about that. But, boy, it was tough. I agonized over that spot. I swapped out a couple. I had Scarrato in there. I had Adrian Amos in there for a while. I went around and around and around. So I kind of like with defensive tackle, no right answer for sure. And just going back to corners, it is going to be a long time, in my opinion, before anybody, at least the way I voted, knocks Alan Zomaitis out of that top spot. Boy, total package of leadership and production at his position. One of the best Nittany Lions, and I'm really glad that guy is part of the staff. And from what I hear, a big-time secret weapon in Penn State's recruiting success we're having right now. So cool story.
I hear his name mentioned a lot. I had him number one also, and I think he's a guy who gets overlooked in general, Chris. All right, Chris, that is it for our show. Thank you all for listening. Make sure you join us next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show.
Happy Valley United is the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student-athletes at Penn State. These opportunities allow student-athletes to engage with charitable causes and participate in business engagements to build their brands while making a positive impact. The collective connects fans, alumni, businesses, and charities with student-athletes harnessing the power of Nittany Nation. Go to happyvalleyunited.com to connect with your favorite Nittany Lion team.